Hi, good morning. This is Reza here from Wild Asia. I got a small group of people together today to really chat about this new program that's just come out on AFC. And this was really a program about the issues of oil palm. And the title of the program was Good Fat, Bad Fat. And I brought in couple of our team. Sume is joining us on a Skype channel from PJ. Sharon, I think, is somewhere at home. And Deb's too. And we're all joined here to have a little discussion about this program. And over in Australia, there's Kyron, who's part of the Malaysian Climate Justice Network. And she's also joining us. And I'll go into this sort of very unedited version of the whole conversation, and really the conversation is about just some of the issues that maybe the program has missed, and really a discussion about how to move forward, and really from us as a collective group of people, how do we move forward to really tease out the issues so that we can have some clarity about how to move forward. Okay, thank you, and I hope you enjoy this, and do give us some feedback about, you know, if you have your own opinions or if you have other things to share, and you can put this online via the comment box, which is at the bottom of this page. All right, thank you. I don't know whether anybody had watched, it's been on this AFC channel, which is, a very food-orientated channel. And this was something that was broadcast a couple of days ago, and the title of the program was called Good Fat, Bad Fat, and it said it was produced by AFC, but I have a sneaky feeling I think it may have been funded by the industry. But
boss, Amy confirmed that it's funded by MPOC.
Oh, it is.
Right.
I knew.
Right.
Yep. So anyway, but it was, for me, the program was interesting. That, I think there is an all out campaign right now to try and paint oil palm as a positive oil, I think, from a health perspective. But as we all know, there's other issues involved with it. So, I mean, maybe before we start, I think Sharon has a little summary about what the program was, and what I really wanted was just to hear from you know, just maybe a few viewpoints as to why. I mean, are there any other issues that that we need to consider, or maybe just any opinions on this? But maybe I'll pass you over to Sharon first.
So basically, basic facts first. Apparently, Malaysia exports 20 million tons a year to 150 countries around the world and reap 60 billion a year. So it's a lucrative business. I think there's a total of 4.5 million hectares of plantations in Malaysia. Palm oil is exported to Europe and US, but the public basically doesn't even realize that they are consuming or using palm oil products. And major consumers, the cosmetic industry and the fast food industry. So the issues that they raised include palm oil as biofuel. There's a growing talk of alternative energy. So palm oil is a good source of biofuel. But the question is, if palm oil is cultivated for biofuel, where does it leave for food? So this guy came up with the possibility that if only waste is used for biofuel. And then they also say it reduces gas emissions from producing fossil fuel, and palm oil can be converted into producing other things like ester. The voiceover guy, whatever he call it, he says they recognize the need to protect wildlife for tourism, because Malaysia attracts a lot of tourists for every year. But it's a kind it's weird. It's a weird argument to, you know, like, yeah, so that's one. They interviewed one person from Greenpeace. She says basically if all palm expansions into peatlands would be a problem, they're just using the biofuel excuse that will contribute to climate change rather than mitigating it. And then issues like forest fires, loss of species, the Mauritian bit, I don't quite understand, boss, but you can explain later, I think.
Mauritian?
Moratorium.
I saw moratorium. Okay, there you go.
Yes, the mitigation.
Ah?
Nothing. I'm being sarcastic.
Hey, okay. So, RSPO guy, Rao, he says logging is the main deforestation problem, but because all palm plantations usually come after, so they're always associated together. All palm is growing at a phenomenal rate, putting pressure on existing resources. There's government support for all palm plantations, like Felda, but they interviewed this one. What? So they interview this Malay plantation owner who have a nice house and he earns income. So he's saying that because of all palm production, he's able to provide for his kids and stuff like that. But also the issue here is, what about the orang aslis that are being driven out of their villages, or their way of life is being compromised, that too. And Greenpeace lady also said companies are selling sustainable palm oil, still contributes to the destruction of our environment. Then Rao says palm oil has brought development to developing countries. It provides a living for people. Importantly, providing food for millions around the world, since we're all consuming palm oil. So, but the problem is meeting demand without putting pressure on the environment. So possible solutions, they interviewed some guys, some science lab scientists, food scientists. They say to increase yield per hectare. So so the labs are working on this. Then they're doing stuff like reducing chemicals by using barn owls to control pests, composting ways to reduce methane, and yeah. So because it's hosted by a food channel, so a lot of emphasis on food, on health, on they're kind of advertising palm oil as being cholesterol-free, longer-lasting, and in New York, where trans fat is banned, they use palm oil to bakers use palm oil instead. They say it's palm oil is as good as olive oil, as healthy as olive oil, and they covered the sciences behind LDL and HDL. So all these are the science bits which I don't really quite understand. But basically, so they also mentioned the role of the government to regulate fat consumption.
Those
are all the health and food bits.
Yeah, I think that one of the underlying gist of this is that I think they're trying to penetrate into the American market. And one of the big things that's coming out from the States is the fact that they are trying to ban trans fats in food. And trans fats is essentially coming from non-vegetable oils, which they've hydrogenated to thicken. And oil palm seems to be a natural thickener. So I think they're trying to play the fact that there's a new market to come into. There's a lot of people are already consuming it, and a lot of this is essentially processed food, or people having their French fries and what have you. And kind of glossing over the sort of concern, but if we were to think of those concerns, I mean, if we were to add to the program, what would be I mean, what would be people's thoughts? What are the bits that they've glossed over, I think, I suppose, is the question.
The danger of dependence is something that...
Sorry, I need to speak into the mic.
Yeah, the danger of dependence, because we're, I think if I'm not mistaken, very, because of the boom, we're looking at clearing much more land from that to put in more oil plantations. And the danger of that is that... Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. But the danger is in that is that if you get a bit dependent on that, it's pretty much like any other bubble. If it bursts, then we're going to be put in a pit, just like we were in the rubber situation, I think, a couple of weeks, like, 20 years ago that happened, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's time dependent. Then there's the whole thing about how the REDD, which is part of the UN there's a huge concern what forests are, the definition of forests, and people are arguing
Skype
that.
The program.
Yeah, I'm hearing you.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that is an interesting point. I think the this idea that you, I mean, with if you look at most of your crops from tobacco to cocoa to rubber, it's the patterns has always been the same. There's this boom and bust cycle to a lot of these different crops, and I suppose for oil palm is the question is, are we in this boom phase, or have we had the boom in the past, and this is an industry that's gonna essentially we're on at the upscale, so the scale could actually get a lot larger than where it is today. But the other thing that we're hearing, especially from the people in the industry, is that we're not having the right kinds of people to even manage the existing plantations, let alone wanting to open up new land and having to manage new acreages, let alone, you know, where are you going to find the workers to sustain all of this? So the question of sustainability from an economic perspective is definitely, I guess, something that's been missing. I mean, there's, I think one of the things at the start of the program was they were basically saying, we would not have had KLCC if it wasn't for oil palm.
Yeah, that's true.
But actually that came from oil.
and another concern I thought, which was probably missing, and this is something that I feel very strongly about, is the idea that even under current UN policy, there's a question of a definition of forest, and people are arguing because palm oil plantation are actually very effective, they claim, very effective carbon sequestration mechanism. And so they argue that you can raise down forests, put in oil palms, which I, you know, have a very high economic incentive and can still mitigate climate change, which is absolutely cool. So it's also very highly contentious. And in any case, if they actually go ahead with that definition, it looks as though there might actually be support of clearing out much more forests for people in palm oil. And it looks like Borneo would probably be, and Kalimantan would probably be the biggest targets here. Which are also probably one of the world's major carbon sinks, third, I think, after China and Brazil.
Yeah, and I suppose with that is also, like, where will the expansion be? And the expansions are going to be on all the marginal land that, you know, we haven't got to yet, which means it's going to be peat. So on the other hand, yes, they seem to try and... I think they're trying to dig up some figures to show that oil palm... is carbon neutral, I suppose, or but yet at the same time, what they have cleared would actually be a big problem. I guess you didn't see the program.
Yep.
But do you have anything to say?
Well, yeah. So it's a whole idea of what development is. Was it Rao who said that they brought development to rural areas and all of that, right? But what is development is so subjective to whoever you're talking to.
So we've been looking into sort of expansion of oil palm in PNG. So I've been looking at a lot of literature with regards to that, and looking at the position of NGOs there. And basically, you know, these are two different worldviews of what development is. And from what I've read, it's in a traditional sense in PNG, for example, they use their land, they're very close to the land, like all natives are. And somebody did a research on the value of the land in PNG. And as it's been just being managed by the tribes and the clans there traditionally for their own domestic crop, for their local market crops, this guy in his research showed that actually the land has so much more value under the traditional management as opposed to the land being incorporated into a business to be leased to an oil palm company for oil palm development, and the natives just getting sort of a cut of the profits from oil palm. And you know, the NGO's position are that it's obviously so much more sustainable if the native groups there do their own thing and have this very diverse livelihood, planting their own food crops, having some market crops and a little bit of cash crops, rather than putting all into the oil palm basket. There's a whole lot of other arguments as well, but it comes to what is development, what kind of development do people want, and what is sustainable development. And the way I see it, large multinationals come into rural area which previously have no concept of a cash economy, have no sense of money, and suddenly getting all this change overnight is hugely unsustainable.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree. And maybe this is the crux where people are not thinking about industrial development versus really what is sustainable development, you know, which is quite a diverse, very localized economy. And I mean, one of the things that Sharon pulled up from the reading was how the loss of land meant that a lot of these especially the village women, didn't have their garden plots. And it wasn't a straightforward, okay, they didn't have the resources, but it also meant that they were cut off from a cultural dimension, a cultural and social dimension, because having some garden crops meant that they could have something to sell in the market. Selling something in the markets meant that you had a little bit of cash, but on top of that, which was probably more important, is also the social interactions that you're getting with the other ladies, the traders, etc., etc. Now, I've just been reading something from the States where they were saying that the rise in farmers' markets is as much a reaction to wanting to get more organic products or more localized products, as well as actually getting some social interactions, because a lot of people in the States are shopping in supermarkets and they don't actually meet anybody. And in farmers' markets, they did some study which basically said that you had 10 more conversations in a farmer's market than you did in a supermarket. And so people were going there to be sociable, I think, yeah. at the end of it. Exactly. But I think this whole argument about oil palm is maybe it's very clouded in my mind. I think on the one hand, it's the food issue, which, you know, undoubtedly maybe it's a good oil. Maybe that which we should just say, okay, that's a given. But as soon as you've got industrial level agriculture, then you're going to end up in a whole series of other problems. And I think this is what Rao was talking about. This, you know, rapid expansion is when you're going to put a lot of pressure on a lot of people. And you're also going to see a lot of opportunists coming into the scene.
Yeah, yeah. Just to add to that, also, I've got a friend in Indonesia, a young person who works in a local organization, and I just wanted to share something that he says. One of the problems with having One of the problems with having a sudden demand in clearing up forests, a lot of people argue that there's a possibility of opportunists to sort of use that. And I hear that there are some instances out of which they use clearing out land as a sort of smokescreen to really what they want, which is timber. And this happens in Indonesia because, especially with the illegal loggers. And so you've got that massive clearing of land, and suddenly it's been left for years and years and years, and under the sort of pretense that they're going to be developing all plantations, palm oil plantations in that. So if I'm not mistaken, the Indonesian government has, looked at repossessing that land, which where like situations like that happen. But also illegal logging in Indonesia. One of my friends does in Aceh is that he actually has he takes in these loggers, and what he does is he's opened a cocoa plantation, and cocoa needs like a canopy to grow, so he carries out afforestation projects. So that's very beneficial, and those are the type of solutions that a lot of Indonesian NGOs are looking at. So we might, if we're moving on to solutions, then that is and if economic incentive is something that people are discussing, and how cultural livelihoods are being affected, that is one of the ways that we could actually get locals involved, and how they could contribute.
Well, actually, just picking up from that, I guess if, I mean, also one of the sort of storylines with this was how oil palm is the backbone not just for KLCC, but also for a lot of poor people. And then they brought in this small sort of settler, and how he, how he gained in the process and things like this. Again, this is, it's a given. Except that if we're going to talk about local development and local economies, then maybe there are better ways of doing this, which is kind of like what Soons was saying. And in which case, then maybe cocoa might be one option. There might be other people looking at other crops. But I suppose it does force people to think about local economies from a very different perspective. And that sort of new thinking is probably not widely in many people's mindsets, especially from a development or a government mindset. I still can't see how that's going to solve this issue, except trying to deal with this current demand, which will not go away, and how people can say that, it's good for our people and it's good for the economy, and there is no other alternative from that perspective that I can see as a crop.
Well, this is something that a really interesting sort of idea that it's very philosophical, and I worry that it might actually derail the conversation. But one of the things that has actually been of concern is food security, and a lot of people talk about how there is an issue in regards to having a capitalist market control our food, and this is something that we might look at. And at least question where exactly the power should be, and if the government takes control of things like, the oil palm industry which we don't, because it's mainly a capitalist market, then we might see a different way of thinking. It might shift the way that we, organize or sort of use our resources. Because they also have to think about sustainability. They also have to deal with what happens on the ground in terms of the livelihoods of the people. So the problem I feel that the reason why it is okay, clearing out massive amounts of land in such a short time is because it's mainly a capitalist market. And throw that out.
Well, I guess maybe the problem is that, say with RSPO, they've used the word sustainability, and maybe what we're talking about is responsible industrial development on one end, And then how do you make sure that these people don't end up in the wrong places? How do you ensure that they are a more responsible employer, etc., etc.? Which is kind of maybe that more of what that's all about. And then the second thing is essentially what this guy called Bill McKibben, which I think all of you should read. You know, his book Deep Economy is essentially about this idea that not so much the capitalist economy, but really how all our economic models are based on growth, and that there's other ways of looking at development, and there might be other ways of even tracking what is sustainable development. And that's really quite interesting, because I think that's really what you've just mentioned in terms of looking at more sustainable economies, that really needs a new model, which maybe is not there yet, but this is the thing that we need to sort of find. Or we need to find a way of defining what are those values which need to be seen in a sustainable community, so that we can actually start thinking about, well, how do we make that happen? And I think maybe that's the clarity that I'm seeking in terms of, well, what are those values? Suze, do you have anything to say?
Well, I agree with you. We need to redefine sustainability. So take it back from the sort of huge multinationals who are claiming that they are sustainable. Because yes, I agree that sustainability for them means they are being responsible employers. You know, they have adequate waste management, etc., etc. But they are not looking at a sort of a landscape level. And how to match it to the location where they are operating. You know, oil palm for us is not in the peninsula, for example. It's been here for a long time. We've adapted to it. But oil palm in a new place like Solomon Islands or PNG, you know, it's another world, you know. And we need a redefinition.
Mm.
And we need to get it out there. And we have examples already of what could be local sustainable development, where food security is one of the, you know, it is a key idea for local sustainable development.
Mm.
Yeah, this is another idea I'd just like to throw out, because looking at that as well, the idea of having resources such as palm oil that the Malaysian economy is so is already so dependent on, and will potentially be even more dependent on as we continue to bring down forests and develop even more plantations, is the idea of having profit-driven companies control that resource. And I believe that that's a danger as well, because, I mean, a lot of, if you're profit-driven, then therefore you only make or create that resource or sort of supply that resource as long as it's profitable. And so this is why you see like huge, if you look at the local, like supermarket, for example, have massive amount of food being thrown out simply because people aren't buying them. So people aren't growing food simply because it's not to feed people, definitely not to make a profit.
Yeah, you're right.
This is why government intervention has to be seen as crucial in this sense, that it cannot solely become a commodity that is purely driven by profit.
Mm.
This is the whole idea of a capitalist market and how, and the danger of looking at that. So there has to be a system out of which we have to ensure sustainability, not just in terms of the economy, but also in terms of, not just in terms of food security, but not just in terms of, you know, things on the ground and sustainability of the land and the landscape.
Mm.
It's very holistic. It's a whole shift. It's a whole shift of thinking. That is what's required.
I think I agree. I think this that last point is, I think what I've been thinking about in terms of, it's about people setting limits, and the limits are set by your geographic boundaries, because you can't imagine that you can develop every single space, because you're then going to end up with a lot of issues, and we're in a situation where you've got, we're almost at capacity in most places, And then on top of that, we've got very weak pollution control. So we're actually cutting back all more living space, which is quite scary from a, I guess, from a Malaysian Asian perspective. And the problem with that is, at a national level, you know, again, it's like, well, how are they keeping track of these things? Something that the OECD countries had was, they've got this sort of very broad spectrum set of indicators which everybody reports on, but maybe that's something we need to be thinking about at a national level, which can give us confidence that we are managing, or we're aware of our limits, so that you can plan for some degree of industrial agriculture, but you need to balance that with other things, which is conservation and more sustainable communities and other things. But that's not there yet, right now. Sharon, is there anything you want to add?
No, I'm just listening in.
Deb?
No, I'm just listening in, and I think it makes sense that, you know, I mean, your point of view is sustainability in terms of landscapes, in terms of employers and sorts, but the last point really did make sense, if it's going to be a holistic idea, then it needs to be sustainability in a sense, which means, you know, creating sort of income growth. If people were to move away from farm owned, so so that's just, but I don't know how to go about that. But last point being it.
Soon.
Going back to the video again, and one thing that's not mentioned probably is the conflicts that has erupted because of oil palm development. And that's a whole other issue and topic.
Right. No, but I, and that's when, you know, we're ending up in new land, or the land that's left, which, you know, maybe somebody's laid claim, or I mean, the big expansion in Sarawak is quite scary when it's a lot of people's lands, which is that, you know, we're then ending up in the, you know, whose land is it, etc.
Yeah, and now Siam, huh? The latest news of going in there to open up NCR land, 20,000 hectares, and the locals were protesting, but they signed the MOU anyway.
Yeah.
And Siam is supposed to be an RSPO certified. I mean, they've got how many plantations now which are RSPO certified? So I think there has to be a Malaysian palm oil watch somewhere.
Yeah, well, I've been hearing this discussion on the reading in the M&S forum, because I think some people had picked that up, and they said that, you know, if M&S is taking money from Siam, then, you know, we should be saying something, we should be speaking up, because they should not be opening up. And then on top of that, they, you know, they said that they're still waiting for the EIA approvals, and they're still going ahead with the project. So it's like, it's already a given, and they're just moving on. But I do know they have some issues in Indonesia, and I think that might be a threat to them keeping their RSPO certificates. Anyway, I think we better try and sum up, but I can't really think of a way of summing up. Kyron, can you help us sum up, since you sound intelligent?
Oh, okay. Well, really quickly, possibly we highlighted probably what was missing from that show, which I didn't watch, but I've got a pretty clear idea of what was talked about. Now, possibly it's just about looking at how we could sort of use what, so possibly, I think for me, the only way I see is moving forward, how we could identify stakeholders and sort of use leverage points to move forward with that. I think we've identified, I think, a whole host of stakeholders. So, yeah, I think that's possibly the best way.
Okay, good. And I think in my mind still, it's that I think needing to have clarity on what is industrial development, industrial capitalist development, and trying to set limits for that so that we have some breathing space to think about, well, how do we create sustainable communities, which is, you know, economic independence, energy independence, and actually a happier community. And these are definitely things that are very fresh in my head. I'm just trying to think, how do these things work? But I think it's also something that I feel that it's, these values maybe need to be defined, or they need some more discussion about, well, what would make a good sustainable community? And then try them out, try and see whether we can develop those leaders to experiment in different communities or even organizations. I mean, that's in my mind. I think this is a sort of the dot dot dot. I think these are things that we need to just keep in mind. Okay, well, thanks very much. I'll try and cut this and maybe just add a quick introduction in the beginning and then post this up online maybe by today. So, but anyway, thanks very much, everybody.
Thanks, Kyron.
Thanks, Kyron. Thanks, Kyron. Thanks, Kyron.